This is Mike Vandervoort on Drive Through HR, the internet's number one rated HR daily podcast. And we have had a change in schedule. Our guest today was supposed to be Kevin Steckelum, and I'm sorry if I mispronounced that because I've never met Kevin. He's the talent acquisition director at Humana, and he was not able to join us. But through the magic of the internet and some close friends, I was able to book another guest on a show that I hadn't even planned to do. So Ben Eubanks, thanks for bailing us out within 15 minutes of the show. Welcome to Drive Through. How are you today?
It's great to be back on Drive Through HR, Mike, and it's good to talk to you as well. It's been a while since we caught up.
We had about a 5-minute private interlude where we got to exchange some personals, and that's good. So Ben, you know, we've been doing this. The theme on the show is failure and stuff, but you know, we're not gonna put you through the ringer. You know, we'll give you a break. So today's show is gonna kind of be just Mike and Ben chatting about HR for 30 minutes and catching up with each other. So before we go, most people that listen to the show are likely to know you by reputation, but just tell us, introduce yourself, tell us what you're doing today, and you know, and then we'll get into some HR discussion.
All right. So by day, I work for a company called Brandon Hall Group. I'm an analyst, and recently I made the transition from being kind of general HR to being actually a learning analyst. So I spend a lot of my time focusing on companies that are implementing new learning strategies, case studies around that. We're doing a lot of research on mobile, social, gamification, all around learning and development space, training, so the full spectrum there. So I spend my days doing. I do a lot of writing, some speaking, attend some events. I'm going to a great nonprofit event in Little Rock in a couple of weeks I'm excited about. So that's kind of my daily run. Also, in the background, I run the website Upstart HR. I write about HR and whatever else comes to mind there. I've done that for more than 6 years now. And another 6-year anniversary coming up is HR Evolution in November. We'll be in St. Louis, Missouri. It will be an exciting event and one that we're kind of going to have some fun with, because you know, many events are at, you know, a very corporate space, some sort of conference-y type of location. We're actually going to be hosting it at the Morgan Street Brewery Lodge there in St. Louis. So it's going to be a different kind of space, different flavor, and we're excited about that.
Cool. I'm hoping to go, but I may have some other travel issues, as I said earlier, and so I hope to go. I know I've been to maybe half the HR Evolutions in the 6 years since you guys launched it. I missed the first one and went to the second one in Atlanta, and then I guess last year we were in Dallas, right, or Grapevine?
Grapevine, yes.
So anyway, some great locations. We'll talk a little bit more about HR Evolution specifically in a few minutes. So Ben, learning analyst. So you're talking to me, mm-hmm. So you're focusing on learning management systems and the way people do training. What does that specifically entail for you in your new role?
So there's the two sides of it. Obviously, there's the corporate side of the vendor side. And we work with a lot of vendors, helping them, whether it's providing content for them to help teach their customers how the best companies in the world are managing their learning, how they're doing their training, what sort of modalities work best. You know, is the classroom environment still top? Is it still the most used? So we do a lot of research through studies for that. Get the data out and create a lot of content for them to help them out. We advise them. We also just get a good look at everybody that's out there so that we can work with on the corporate side, helping them to understand what vendors are out there, what this one has that one doesn't. So staying on top of the latest trends and everything on technology helps with that. On the corporate side, again, we put those research assets together based on, you know, white papers and all that other fun stuff based on the research that we do. But then we do advisory, so we work with companies. For instance, a company came to us recently and said, hey, you know, we have a worldwide, we're a global company, we have learners everywhere, and for the life of the company, we've basically outsourced everything. We've never created our own content, and now we're ready to bring it in-house. Please help. So something as massive as that, or something as simple as we're looking to get away from printing out big manuals to hand people for trainings. How can we do that with an app? How can we do that via mobile? How can we do that to really engage our learners beyond the classroom environment? So, again, it runs kind of the full spectrum, but a lot of the companies that come to us are looking to, for those sort of advisory pieces, and that's what I get to do every day, and it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy my work, and I still pinch myself sometimes just because I'm excited to get to write and do the things that I get to do every day.
Yeah, you made a big transition. I guess it's probably been I'm bad at keeping up with everybody, but I guess you've been with Brandon Hall a couple of years now,
year
or
and
is
a half.
It a little less, a little
year
shorter?
And a half.
2.5 years. So you went from working in a traditional kind of smaller single shop HR role, or maybe not quite shop of one, but it
yep.
wasn't a company, right? Into this analyst
That's
role,
right.
which is a big pivot for you. You want to share what that was like and kind of what you've learned so far in the couple years you've been doing the new role?
So it's been very interesting because a lot of my experience and a lot of my focus has been typically for smaller organizations, here's how you do things, here's how you get your work done, very tactical. When I moved to this role, I spent a lot more time focusing on the strategy, the big picture focus, and the bigger company kind of issues. And, you know, everybody has similar issues, but one of the things that I have really, again, enjoyed is just getting the opportunity to see this broad range of companies. Today I published a case study on a healthcare organization. Yesterday it was on a financial services company. You know, last week it was on some consulting firm. I get to look at all these companies, how they're doing what they do. One of the fun things that we do at Brandon Hall Group is we have this awards program. It runs twice a year, once for the vendor focus, once for corporate. But companies from around the world submit their things they're doing. Now, let's say you put in a new talent acquisition process, and you have some pretty significant results come out of that. You know, maybe you're hiring twice as fast, or you cut your hiring costs, something like that. Companies can put this application together around that program and submit it, and they're rated against all these other companies around the world, all industries, all sizes, and we award them based on their merit. And so I get to see all these things. I get to help with that judging process, and then at the end, I get tagged to publish all those, but it's just amazing, again, to see this broad range of things. You know, if you want to know how Walgreens handles their engagement and their leadership development, you know, we've got that, and we have that data, and it's just a lot of fun to be able to take that peek into organizations, because we always wonder, you know, I would assume you did in your role at Public previously, but we always wonder, how are they doing it over there? How are those other people doing that, really? You know, we know the theory. We know that we can even see the research. We know some numbers and data. But how is someone actually solving this problem somewhere else today? And that's what I really enjoy.
Right. And that is, you know, I made a role change, beginning of this year. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, get an opportunity. It's probably more limited than yours, but I get an opportunity to see a lot of different companies who are members of the organization Q that I run now, and it's fascinating to get an opportunity to kind of share with people what their issues are, you know, behind the scenes, talk about what they're doing. In some cases, you know, not really do consultative role, but make referrals, and that's one of the big benefits of Q actually, which is a member services association, is that, you know, if somebody calls up and says, how do you do XYZ, we put it out to our membership, and quite often there are 4 or 5 companies that will jump up and agree to network privately. So we don't publish case studies and that sort of thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
yet. Hopefully we'll move into that sort of a role someday. But it's fascinating to get to see it. And you're right, at Publix, way, you know, always looking how do they do it at Wegmans, what's going on at Kroger's, and you know, you can extrapolate a lot of stuff from the public information sources that are available, but it's hard to crack the code behind the scenes. So you guys got a kind of a unique periscope there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So Ben, the other thing I was thinking about, I guess, is as you're doing this and as you're writing, so you write a lot now professionally, you know, for your work, and yet you're still blogging. And you said it was going on 6 years, because a lot of us all started around the same time, and some of us, like me, have let it die on the vine, and others have kept going. So how do you find the inclination to continue to write your blog, and how's that part of your life holding up with you know, kind of doing it all the time?
You know, that was my fear, is that I would spend my time writing during the day about these different things. You know, I blog for the company blog and everything else. I write a variety of things from kind of engaging like that to something more dry, like a white paper or a research brief. So I do all this writing, and I was worried that I would be kind of burned out. I wouldn't have any interest or anything else. And I have slowed down on that, but I've kept up. My goal is to post once a week at least. And I've kept that up since I started there. And the thing that I'm not sure if it's just I'm writing about something a little bit different. I'm writing something that I'm interested in, but is not really a fit for the company blog, if that makes sense. You know, this week, for instance, I wrote about, you know, putting how companies adopt HR technology for small organizations, because typically the companies we're working with are, you know, Fortune 100, Fortune 1000. They don't care. They know they've already got that all down, but there's still a lot of people out there that need that information, that want to know that information. So I write about those things because I still get emails every day from people saying, hey, I've read this. It helped me with this problem we were having. So that really helps to inspire me to do it. But honestly, I love it. I get up in the mornings and I don't work on the weekends. I really work hard to not do that. But when I wake up at 6 o'clock on a Saturday morning and I've got some time, I look forward to sitting down and just writing a blog post to share out there, because I know people want it, people need it, and it's a good outlet for me.
Yeah, see, I went the other way. At work now, we put out a weekly newsletter, and while it's not filled with in-depth personal analysis, you know, it's links and stuff, but I write reports, not as deep as what you're doing, but I write a lot of stuff internally, and I just kind of, it goes 12 hours a day, and when I get home at night now or get up in the morning, I'm thinking about writing for, you know, for the workplace and not for my own blog, and there's so much going on in the world of labor relations. I think what happened was my passion, you know, that was in blogging, kind of merged really deeply into my professional edge, and so I just, you know, I don't have enough variety to share out anymore. But ironically, we just 2 days ago relaunched our website for the organization, which we'd been working on for a while in conjunction with some other things. And so the website is qinc.com, and it's still the same, but it's all, we went from a website that had been created custom for our organization that had no blogging capability, and everything had to be put up in HTML code, and now we're on a WordPress-based format, so we can create content on the fly and do that. And I've actually written in the last 3 days three new blog posts, which are probably three more than I wrote in the previous month. So I'm blogging now on behalf of the organization only, rather than on my own blog, not by any restriction, but just more by that's where I seem to have the brain power right now. I guess the question I was going to ask off the blogging thing, and then we'll flip back over to something else. 6 years in, and you said you're still getting comments and you're getting emails. Do you think blogging, you know, that it's gotten so noisy? There's so many HR blogs, whereas, you know, when we started, there were only a handful. Do you think blogging's still relevant today, or has it changed? Is there too much out there? I'm just curious about your take, because I know you've helped a lot of people build blogs and start things behind the scenes and, you know, mentoring programs. And so what's your take today on blogging in the HR space?
So I haven't thought about that in a while. So I like the idea that there are more voices out there. At the same time, like you said, there's a lot of noise, and some are not adding a lot to the discussion. So that's kind of painful. But what I do like is that, you know, if I'm Joe HR manager and I'm looking for help on how to deal with this employee relations problem, and I go out there and search, because there are more people out there sharing, I'm more likely to find something good out there. But so I like that aspect of it. At the same time, I think that the ones that are really good, that are consistent, that are well-written, that have good search engine optimization, have those basic fundamentals taken care of, they're just going to continually increase. They're going to continually grow. My traffic has grown over the years, partially because there's more content there, but partially because I've gotten smarter about some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that over time, that's a good question, really. I don't have a perfect answer for it, and the thing that I think about occasionally is, I mean, and maybe you thought about this too, but if I hadn't started 6 years ago, would I start today? And I would.
Okay. That's pretty telling right there. And you know, I don't remember the last new blog I saw. I mean, there are there are Blogging for Jobs and Performance I Create, and you know, some of the others that have evolved, you know, more professional TLNT and all those. I mean, there are tons of multi-author blogs out there. I see new people, Fistful of Talent. I read somebody on there the other day that I had never seen before. I don't think it was necessarily new, but it was a voice that was somewhat, you know, new to me. So I think there's plenty of relevance. I just find myself, you know, hard-pressed to keep up with the volume, and so I think I've retrenched back to like a few, which it's just, I guess, you know, if it, like you said, if it's quality and it works for you, you're going to kind of find it, and those are going to be the ones that that'll stand out for an individual. I was thinking about it the other day with this blog launch of ours, whether or not it'll even get any notice, or you know, it's an interesting experiment. That's really where the genesis of that question came from. Let's switch back to HR, or switch over to HR Evolution for a little bit. I know it's in St. Louis this year, and you mentioned it's going to be at a brew pub kind of place and a little bit different forum than maybe, you know. So the thing with HR Evolution is it started out and it was a completely different kind of event in the first couple of years. And then you guys went through some morphing and got involved with the HR tech side and went to Vegas for a couple of years. And I think now you've kind of broken away and gone back a little bit more to your roots. So what kind of an event is HR Evolution today? And if somebody hasn't been before, what can they expect?
So if someone has not been, what could they expect? The event is, again, I mentioned the location. We try to make the places that we go very different because we want the conversations to be different. I was just actually talking to someone about half an hour ago about a learning conference I'm going to later in October. And I said, you know, she was kind of apologizing that they were only going to have about 100 attendees. And I said, that's a great thing because that virtually guarantees you're going to have more conversations, you're going to have more interactions. When you go to an event and you're sitting in a room with 150 people, you're not really encouraged to stand up and ask questions or to talk to people. But when you're in a room with 20 or 25 in a breakout session and you're sitting in a circle instead of sitting in that, you know, lecture format with everybody facing the front, you're more engaged, you have more opportunity to share. And that's one of the things that's really encouraging about HR Evolution. When we pulled it together originally back in 2009, we said, hey, there are a lot of conferences out there, and they're not really giving us what we're looking for. So we put this together, said, hey, we're going to bring people together. Our first one was in Louisville, and we sold 50 tickets and said, we're going to try this and see what happens. And the people showed up. Everybody was very engaged, shared a lot of insights, and made a lot of relationships and connections that are still going strong today. I was going to say, one of the requirements for people to actually be a facilitator at the conference is that they have to have attended one before, because we've bent that rule a little bit in the past, and it's come back to bite us because people aren't familiar with how we do things. We don't do slides. We don't expect someone to stand up there and speak to the audience for 45 minutes straight. It's you pitch a question out there and then let everybody tear it apart, share their experiences, dig in, and it's very participatory. And some of the conversations we have are different too. We're not going to tell you the top 10 ways your company could get sued this year, but we might tell you how to change your HR practice. We might have a debate about why recruiting is more important than it's given credit for, or you know, whatever it is. We also have some fun sessions that are geared towards thinking differently about HR. Last year, one of the sessions was called Half-Baked HR Ideas, and the two facilitators broke everybody up into groups, and the audience had to come up with their idea that they were going to pitch back to a panel of judges as a potential idea for, you know, let's say you're going to start a company, what would you want to do? And we all came together and came up with a variety of ideas that were very interesting, very unique, and that's a lot of fun. And some of those things, it's been very interesting to note, those ideas that we came up with that session, I've seen companies doing those things this year. So it's very much a forward-looking, forward-thinking event as opposed to telling you what's already happened in the past.
Yeah, you know, it also gives an opportunity. My organization runs a conference twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. And my first big event, we have a larger turnout than HR Evolution, and it's largely labor and employee relations professionals along with some operational people from companies that show up. But mostly it's people who are getting together to talk about a very nerdy niche topic, you know, labor and employee relations and that kind of stuff for 2.5 days. And one of the things that I saw last year in Grapevine was the HR Improv, which I think you guys may have done more than once, but it was actually, since I think I missed the year before, it was the first time I'd seen that.
Yeah.
And I thought it was hysterical. And for those that don't know, HR Improv is essentially you get a bad PowerPoint slide deck and you have to present that slide deck to a crowd on the fly. And it turns into very embarrassing sort of live HR for the people who are brave enough to do it. So I stole that idea and revised it a little bit, and we did an improv session as a concurrent session at our conference on something that's in the labor relations field referred to as a 25th hour speech. And what the 25th hour speech is, Ben, is a speech that a company would give if they were involved in a union campaign. It's the last speech that the top manager at the site normally gives as an appeal to a group of employees who are trying to decide whether they want to be represented by a union or not. And it's something that not everybody can do well, and it's something that only a few people get to do, you know, relatively, you know, maybe once or twice in their career. So we asked three people, a lawyer, a consultant, and a practitioner, to present their speech based on a set of made-up facts, and they did that. They each had 10 minutes, and they did it to a live audience, and then the audience kind of voted and critiqued those speeches live in a session. So you should have seen the you know, instead of envisioning three presentations by 10 minutes by a panel in a concurrent session on Tuesday afternoon, we had people jumping out of their chairs going, I can't believe you said that. It was one of the best. It's one of the best sessions at a classic type conference that I've ever seen, because we brought that live aspect and that impromptu kind of spirit from HR Evolution over to Q. The hard part is getting somebody to do it every time. So we've agreed we're going to do an event like that on some sort of theme once a year. So the next one will happen next year in May, and I'm not sure what the topic is, but that event now is kind of going to become hopefully a tradition inside my organization, straight out of HR Evolution. So I thank you guys for the inspiration and coming up with that idea. So anyway, I can't explain it, but it was amazing to watch these people on the crowd side. They acted as if they were the employees hearing that speech, and it was fantastic. So Ben, you work from home. We're down to about 6 minutes. We were catching up and we were joking around. You work from home, and I told you my wife works from home and told me I'm not allowed to work at home, so I have an office. But tell us how that works for you. You've got three kids, a wife, and maybe a dog or a cat, I'm not sure. But how does working from home compare to working in a traditional HR organization like you used to in the past?
So there's a couple different elements to it. One is the work. We've already talked over some of those things. It lends itself more to that working remotely thing, which is nice. I couldn't imagine working in HR and having to interact with people and really understand some of the nuances of things going on and not being directly plugged in. I know that we all think that we can be remote and that, you know, we don't have to be in an office for it to count. But I'm still connected with a lot of HR people. I still volunteer with my local SHRM chapter. I'm connected and plugged in as I possibly can be without doing it every day. And I'm still exposed to the stories and everything else going on. And I couldn't imagine being effective and not being really plugged in physically there so you can see things going on, understand what's bothering people, and pick up on those things that you might not otherwise catch. Because I'm sure you've run across it plenty of times. You happen to see someone somewhere, one of the employees somewhere, and like, oh, I was going to talk to you about this. And you know that they never would have come to your office. They never would have called you if you hadn't been right there at that exact moment to catch them and offer them that opportunity to connect with you. So that's one thing that's tough about that. Anyway, what I really was surprised by is I thought I would miss some of the talking to people every day and being interactive like that. But again, because the nature of the work lends itself more to being solo, we do all of our work via virtual meetings. We have conference calls and all other fun stuff. But for the most part, I work completely alone. Don't hear people. Don't talk to people. And there are days when I drop the kids off at 7:30 in the morning, and I don't talk to anybody until I go and pick them up after school. So for some people, that would be a nightmare. But I really enjoy it and have – it surprised me, but it's worked out well for me.
You're an introvert by nature, at least that – but although you speak and do a lot of outgoing things. And I'm sort of a secret introvert. I think I'm more open, talking a lot at times, but then I need to find space to retreat. And right now I personally work in an office by myself. And I find it very difficult sometimes not to be connected and not to talk to the members. And I also miss just the interaction of the office. So I have to find new ways to do that. And for me, it's complicated a little bit because I moved to a small town where I don't have a lot of connections like I did when I worked at Publix. So I've had like a twofold change, and it affects me sometimes. I find that I have to get out and find some energy to kind of be back here by myself. So it's been a little bit different experience on my end. And you're right, I think we all believe we can do it, but it requires sort of a constant level of attention, I think, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And we even talk about actually getting the things done, because when you're at an office, when you're around people, it's sometimes easier to focus when you know that you're around other people. And that's one of the things that a lot of my friends that work in more traditional roles have said, I could never do that. I couldn't make myself work. I couldn't, I'd want to check the laundry or go for a walk, or I'd want to do something else. And I had to manage my time in a very focused manner when I worked in HR. Again, working small HR shop, juggling all the hats, I just had to do it as part of my daily work. So I think doing that, having that experience, helped me to make the transition a little easier than if I was one of those people that needed that accountability, needed someone kind of standing over me and helping me out to make sure I was on task all the time.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So we're down to the last, like 30 seconds. So there's no rule because there's more time left on the show feed. But I told you we'd run at about 30 minutes. So, you talked a bit about your job, and you've talked a bit about HR Evolution. The last thing I told you we'd touch on, I know you had a new addition to the family within the last year. So let's just catch people up on personal life and where they can find you, and then we'll roll on out of here.
All right. If someone wants to find me, you can reach out at upstarthr.com. I'm all over the Brandon Hall Group blog, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, all the places there. You can find me easily, Ben Eubanks. As far as the personal life, our our little girls are not so little anymore. They just started kindergarten. Bella and Bree turned 5. Holden Cow. Briggs is just about to be a year old. And it was funny, last year at HR Evolution, he was due within a week or so of the event, and I spent the entire time on pins and needles expecting a phone call and making contingency plans to get back home. Thank goodness he waited until I was back here to be born. But, yeah, his birthday is in November. My birthday is in November, and HR Evolution is. So it's going to be a great month.
It's a big month. Well, Ben, I appreciate you being on the show. And I appreciate you coming on, especially at the last minute, since we had the guest who got into a conflict and couldn't make it with Kevin. So thanks for being on Drive Through, and I'm going to take us out, I guess, to some Prince as the closing tune this morning. So have a great afternoon, and we'll catch you all later, all right?
Thanks, Mike.